You know the exact scenario, right? You're sitting in a conference room. Maybe the lights are a little dimmed.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah. And someone is up at the front running this incredibly flashy new AI chatbot demo. Or maybe they're showing off how this new tool can instantly spit out a perfectly formatted, highly detailed email draft to a client in like 2 seconds.
It's mesmerizing. It genuinely feels like you are looking at the future of work right then and there.
It really does.
Yeah.
But here is the massive roadblock so many companies are hitting right now. Excitement is not ROI. A
Exactly.
cool demo does not automatically translate into a profitable balance sheet. So, I mean, how do we actually know if this is working?
Well, it's the classic trap of the demo room. Everything looks flawless in a controlled, heavily sanitized environment.
Right.
But businesses operate in reality, and reality is filled with legacy software, messy data, and, totally unpredictable human behavior. We are officially transitioning out of the wow phase of AI and stepping firmly into the prove it phase. Leaders are looking at these massive subscription costs and integration fees, and they're realizing they need to justify the spend with cold, hard numbers.
And that is exactly the mission of this deep dive. We're looking at some really fascinating source material focused on measuring AI ROI. It's specifically framed around business success in the highly competitive Orange County market, but the lessons here apply to literally any organization trying to figure this out.
Absolutely. The geography doesn't change the underlying math.
Exactly. So our goal today is to cut through the tech hype and discover the disciplined, measurable ways to prove that AI is generating actual, tangible business value.
I love that.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because the fundamental misstep leaders make early on is starting their entire journey by asking, which AI platform is the most advanced?
Yeah, that is a huge mistake. The technology itself shouldn't be the starting point at all. The question that actually leads to a return on investment is which workflow is actually broken, or which one is consistently slow, expensive, or error-prone.
So it starts with the problem.
Exactly. AI ROI planning has to begin with the work, not the tools. Buying a sophisticated large language model without attaching it to a highly specific, measurable workflow is, well, it's just buying an expensive toy.
Which brings us to a key concept. To measure any improvement on that workflow, you have to know your exact starting point.
The baseline.
Yes. Our source material has a quote that frames this so perfectly. It says, "Without a baseline, ROI is a story instead of a calculation."
That is such a great way to put it.
Right. I mean, it's like trying to improve your marathon time without ever timing your first run. You can buy the most expensive running shoes and hire a world-class coach, but if you don't know what your pace was on day one,
You can't mathematically prove you've improved.
exactly. So what does a baseline actually look like in practice?
Well, a baseline is simply the empirical measurement of how work happens before AI touches anything. Leaders need to document the gritty reality of the work today.
Okay, so tracking the actual minutes.
Yeah. How many minutes does a task take? Where are the manual handoff points between teams? What's the baseline error rate? How long does a customer wait in the queue?
The sources actually give some really grounded examples of what this looks like. Like, think about a professional services firm.
Right.
Their baseline might be timing the exact number of human hours it takes to draft a proposal from scratch.
Yeah.
And that includes the time spent, frantically searching through old files for boilerplate language.
Oh, that takes forever. Or think of a medical office tracking the processing time for patient intake forms.
Yeah. Or even a manufacturer tracking the volume of order review exceptions popping up in their ERP system on a weekly basis.
Exactly. You have to make that current state visible. And the baseline doesn't need to be some flawless, academically peer-reviewed time study. It just has to be honest.
You just need a stake in the ground.
You do. Because once you have that baseline, you immediately run into this huge psychological trap when evaluating AI.
Oh, the time saved trap.
Yes. The assumption that any time saved automatically equals money earned.
I actually want to push back on that a bit because time savings is always the very first metric people throw out there.
Oh, completely.
Like, wait, if an AI writes my emails faster and saves me 10 minutes, isn't that just an automatic win? I mean, getting more done in less time? That efficiency inherently benefits the company, doesn't it?
It feels like a win to you personally because your day got slightly easier. But to the business, speed without direction does not create value.
Oh, interesting.
Think about it. Saving 10 minutes on email means absolutely nothing if you spend those recovered 10 minutes scrolling through the news, or even worse, just waiting around for the next step in a bottlenecked process.
So the business hasn't gained anything on the macro level.
Exactly. We must measure metrics like overall cycle time, queue reduction, and the elimination of manual handoffs.
So it's about the bigger picture.
Right. If AI helps your sales team respond faster to a lead, and that speed increases your conversion rate, well, that translates into a better customer experience and more revenue.
That makes total sense. Time saved is just potential energy. You have to track where that energy actually goes.
Beautifully said.
And mapping it out end to end brings up a really interesting consequence. Because if pure speed isn't the ultimate goal, what happens when we incentivize teams to move too fast with these tools?
They start making rapid fire mistakes.
Exactly. We tend to associate AI with novelty, right? Like doing completely new, highly creative things. But according to the sources, the most valuable AI use cases are often incredibly boring.
The boring applications are where the real money is. I mean it.
Really? Just focus on quality control.
Yeah. These tools are incredibly valuable when they're deployed just to reduce human error. Think about a document review assistant tasked with catching a missing field on a 50-page contract.
Oh, humans miss that stuff all the time.
Constantly. Or an AI standardizing customer service responses across a massive call center so every single client gets the exact same accurate answer.
But the flip side of that is that AI can generate its own unique types of errors. And the hidden costs of those errors can completely wipe out any time you originally saved.
Hallucinations.
Exactly. Large language models are probabilistic engines. They are not deterministic calculators. They are just predicting the next most likely word based on training data. They aren't looking up facts in a database.
Right, and because of that architecture, they invent information.
Yeah. So if your new AI tool increases your drafting speed, but it hallucinates a financial figure in a quarterly report, your ROI literally drops below zero.
It is a negative ROI at that point.
Completely, because it takes exponentially more time to hunt down that fabricated number, figure out where it came from, and fix the downstream chaos it caused than it would have taken to just write the report manually.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is exactly why risk control has to be built directly inside the ROI model.
That is a great point.
Risk isn't just an IT security problem anymore. It is a critical financial variable. Implementing AI introduces massive new vectors for risk.
Like what?
Like sensitive data exposure, inaccurate outputs being sent to clients, or weak permissions allowing unauthorized access to internal documents. A project that saves your team 20 hours a week becomes a massive financial liability if it causes a data breach.
The sources actually point to the NIST AI risk management framework as a highly functional tool for handling this. It shifts the mindset from purely seeking, you know, a gained efficiency to rigorously calculating avoided harm.
Yes.
But practically speaking, how does a mid-market company actually apply a massive federal framework like NIST without just drowning in paperwork?
Practically speaking, applying that framework means mapping your data flows and creating human-in-the-loop checkpoints. You really have to track exactly what internal data the AI has access to.
So checking permissions.
Exactly. If you plug an AI assistant into your company's shared drive, does it respect your existing permission scopes? Or can a junior employee suddenly prompt the AI to summarize the CEO's private strategy document?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be bad.
Very bad. You also need to establish who is auditing the AI's decisions. If the AI is automatically approving or rejecting refund requests, and no human is reviewing a sample of those decisions.
Your operational risk is astronomical.
Exactly. Preventing a massive data leak or a class action lawsuit is a highly measurable return on investment.
Okay, so let's say a company navigates all of that successfully. They set up the permissions, they have a tool that is perfectly safe, highly accurate, and it objectively speeds up cycle time.
Okay.
But then they roll it out and it just sits on a virtual shelf collecting dust. The employees just don't use it.
A tool that employees actively ignore has an ROI of exactly zero.
Right.
User adoption is arguably the most overlooked metric in enterprise software deployment. Once the initial novelty of the chatbot fades away, you really have to track active users versus passive users.
Are they logging in daily, or did they try it once and never come back?
Exactly. You have to monitor task coverage, and crucially, you need to analyze where people abandon the tool or manually override the AI's suggestions.
You know, the immediate reflex for most leaders when they see low adoption is to blame the staff. They assume the employees are just stubborn or, you know, resistant to change.
But the sources explicitly warn against that assumption.
They do. Low adoption is usually a massive red flag about your initial baseline.
Yep. It generally means the tool simply does not fit how the work happens in reality. There might be massive UI friction or latency issues where the AI takes 30 seconds to generate a response.
And the employee realizes they can just type it themselves in 10.
Exactly. Or maybe that specific workflow just wasn't worth automating in the first place.
Which perfectly illustrates what the sources call the end-to-end trap.
Oh, this is a big one.
It is. This happens when a company automates one highly visible step of a process, but they completely ignore the technical architecture of the rest of the workflow.
Yeah, let's break down the mechanics of that. Imagine you deploy an AI tool to instantly summarize massive 100-page PDF reports.
On paper, that sounds amazing. The AI does it in 5 seconds.
It sounds great. But if your legacy CRM or ERP system doesn't have an API endpoint to automatically catch and route that summary, the automation stops right there.
Oh, so an employee now has to manually copy the summary, open the CRM, navigate to the right client profile, and paste the text into, like, 6 different data fields.
Exactly. You haven't actually eliminated the bottleneck. You just shifted it downstream.
That's incredibly frustrating.
If you only measure the time it took to generate the summary, you have an illusion of local efficiency. One team is celebrating an amazing AI shortcut, while the data entry team right next to them is suddenly drowning in a backlog of unverified summaries they have to manually process.
So end-to-end metrics force you to measure the entire lifecycle of the task,
mm-hmm.
from the initial trigger to the final system update.
Precisely.
Well, we've covered some serious pitfalls here. Speed without direction, the hidden costs of probabilistic hallucinations, the absolute necessity of human adoption, and the danger of ignoring API bottlenecks.
It's a minefield.
It is. So how do leaders put these safeguards into practice without building this massive, overwhelming tech bureaucracy that just paralyzes the company?
The playbook outlined in the sources relies heavily on a pilot scorecard. Before you roll anything out enterprise-wide, you define a highly constrained scorecard for a small, controlled pilot program.
The golden rule is restraint, right?
Yes. You limit it to 5 to 8 metrics maximum. You measure task duration, error rate, active daily usage, escalation rate to human supervisors, and data exposure incidents.
And the scorecard only exists to answer one very specific question. What must be true for this pilot to expand?
That's the only question that matters. If the tool dramatically speeds up processing, but it ruins your baseline accuracy rate, you do not expand to the rest of the department. You stop and adjust.
And this requires being brutally honest about the metrics you are looking at. The text aggressively tears down the concept of vanity metrics.
Because vanity metrics are highly deceptive. They look incredibly impressive on a PowerPoint slide, but they have absolutely no correlation to real business outcomes.
Right. A vendor will come in and say, look, your team generated 4,000 prompts this month. The internal chatbot handled 10,000 conversations.
But who cares?
Exactly. A high prompt count might just mean the AI is terrible at its job and employees are having to ask the same question 5 times just to get a useful answer.
Executives do not need to see prompt volume. They need an executive dashboard that translates AI activity into business language. Total hours saved, cycle time reduction, and influenced revenue.
Which raises an important question. Once you launch a successful pilot and actually hit those business metrics, how do you sustain that performance over time?
That is the tricky part, because AI models are not static software. They degrade over time.
And that is where lightweight governance becomes essential.
Yes. And for mid-market companies, the word governance often sounds like an endless series of committee meetings designed to just slow innovation to a crawl.
But lightweight governance is entirely different. It's a pragmatic structure to keep the business agile but protected.
Practically, this means maintaining a central use case register so you know exactly where AI is actually deployed. It means managing API keys strictly so you don't have shadow IT projects popping up in every single department.
Right. You maintain a list of approved vendors and conduct basic data risk reviews before any new tool is plugged into the network.
Part of that governance is also defining your revenue paths before you deploy.
How so?
Well, if the stated goal of a new AI tool is to drive top-line revenue, you have to map the technical integration directly to the cash register.
Got it.
So if you use AI to help your sales reps draft outreach emails faster, your dashboard needs to measure that initial response time. But it also has to track whether those AI-generated emails actually convert into booked meetings.
Right. How fast do those deals move through the pipeline? And ultimately, what is the closed won rate? You have to prove the AI output is actually persuading buyers. Which brings us to the operational reality of maintaining these systems. You build the playbook, you set up the dashboard, you establish the API governance. What should the reality look like a few months down the line?
The sources provide a very specific milestone for this, the 90-day reality check.
At the 90-day mark, the theoretical projections need to be completely replaced by visible, measurable operational gains.
You should be seeing fewer human interruptions for routine questions, cleaner data reporting, and concrete evidence of compliance.
And crucially, you need comprehensive documentation of the decisions made and the specific risks the business actively accepted. Documenting that logic is what turns a one-off IT experiment into permanent organizational knowledge.
And we really need to ground this in the specific regional context provided by our sources, which focuses heavily on businesses operating in Orange County.
Yeah, this is a highly competitive, dynamic market with incredibly high expectations for customer experience. Technical weaknesses do not stay hidden here.
They really don't. If your automated systems introduce latency into the digital experience, or if you have weak security protocols that expose client data, you destroy trust instantly. Customers here will just leave before they even bother complaining.
So the solutions deployed in this environment have to integrate with real teams, operate within strict budgetary constraints, and function flawlessly during peak operating hours.
And the sources note that mid-market businesses often lack the internal infrastructure to manage these complex AI integrations and cybersecurity demands entirely alone.
Right. They point to resources like Technigian, which provides local specialized support for AI consulting, automation architecture, and advanced cybersecurity.
Having a local infrastructure partner like that ensures that the API bridges are actually built correctly, and most importantly, the data remains secure.
Because the ultimate goal isn't just to implement the technology, it's to prevent a phenomenon known as drift. Systems naturally drift and degrade without a dedicated owner.
Drift is a massive technical hurdle with AI. It happens when the underlying data distribution changes, or when user behavior unexpectedly shifts.
Or sometimes, the vendor providing your foundational model updates their system weights behind the scenes without even telling you.
Yes, and suddenly, your perfectly engineered prompt starts outputting a completely different JSON data structure, and your entire automated pipeline just crashes.
It's digital entropy. Things naturally fall apart. And that is the final major warning from the text. You have to treat AI implementation as an ongoing operating discipline.
You can't just install an LLM and walk away. You have to establish monthly operational reviews to check for model drift and monitor day-to-day accuracy metrics.
Then you hold quarterly strategic reviews to ask the bigger questions. What specific baseline actually improved? Where did the workflow get harder? And what entirely new security risk just appeared on our radar?
Maintaining that strict review cadence is truly the only way to ensure the ROI doesn't just evaporate over time. The market will change, the foundation models will constantly update, and your business requirements will evolve.
And if nobody is formally assigned to own the follow-up, the system will eventually break down. Well, we've covered an immense amount of ground today, diving into the mechanics of how this technology actually intersects with real business operations.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. Let's distill the core takeaways for you to bring back to your own team. First, never start by shopping for an AI tool. Start by identifying a broken, measurable workflow.
Second, do the hard work of getting an honest, empirical baseline, tracking handoffs and cycle times.
Third, map your workflows end-to-end so you understand the API integrations required. That ensures you aren't just creating a massive data entry bottleneck downstream.
And finally, remember that preventing model drift, securing employee adoption, and avoiding compliance risks are just as critical to your ROI as the raw hours you initially saved.
Those principles totally shift the entire internal conversation. You move away from, look at this fascinating new algorithm, to look at this sustainable, measurable business outcome.
Exactly.
So here is a direct challenge for you. Think about the most frustrating manual bottleneck in your own day right now. The task that requires pulling data from three different places just to make a simple decision.
Oh, we all have one.
If you were going to baseline that process tomorrow, what exactly would you measure? How many minutes does it take? How many different software interfaces do you have to click through? Where do the errors usually happen?
As you start tracking those baselines, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder. We've spent this entire deep dive analyzing the mechanics of measuring AI's impact on our current workflows, right? Making them faster, safer, and more integrated.
Yeah.
But consider this. As AI agents become more autonomous and capable of stringing together complex actions across different systems, what if the ultimate hidden ROI of AI isn't just executing our current workflows faster, but revealing that some of those legacy workflows shouldn't exist at all.
Wow. That brings us right back to the demo room, but with a much clearer vision. The real operational advantage isn't just automating the busy work. It's architecting a system where the busy work is eliminated entirely. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.